just check me out, the people. Just check me out, the people. Just check me out, the people. Hello, Andy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great to have you on the show. Sorry about those. We had a few problems getting these phone connections through, but I think we're set to go. How are you doing this morning, sir?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Okay, great to hear. So we're excited to have you on the show to talk about your new class that's coming up, the Black Oral Tradition, at McGill's School of Continuing Studies. That's about the culture, politics, and identity of hip-hop. But last time you were on the show, we were talking about the other classes that you were teaching in the fall and the winter, jazz and the civil rights movement and the diaspora of jazz. Would you mind giving us a little debrief on how that went?
Oh, yeah, it went well. The first class for the first semester was the Diaspora of Jazz, which was an array of young folks of Generation X period. And I found that the second semester with jazz and civil rights movement were mostly baby boomers who attended the class.
Oh.
So there was quite the contrast, but I'd say that the people that showed up to the jazz diaspora class were people that were really inquisitive and wanted to know more about jazz and the influences. And there are also folks that would actually try to relate that to hip-hop, because we're talking about 20 to 30-year-olds who are actually within that era.
Right, you're talking about the diaspora of jazz class now?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and so they're both were good classes in terms of how the music was perceived in terms of jazz, and I had a lot to say about it. So the yakka that I am, I got through to a lot of people, and some academics were there. Some of the folks in the indie scene, people from the Matic Massive community, so folks that we are familiar with around town.
Wow,
that's up. Awesome.
Yeah. And they were well attended. I'd say on average 26, at some times it would be 30.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a lot of folks come through, so that's kind of
pleasing. I'll bet a lot of those students must have been musicians too.
That's correct, yeah.
So you're about to start a class on the culture, politics, and identity of hip-hop, and the course description and the list of lecture titles looks like a fascinating overview of the history of hip-hop. What can students look forward to learning about in this class?
Well, some of the students from the Civil Rights Movement class will actually come back to take the class, because what they realize from what I've been talking and saying in class is that it's the post-Civil Rights Movement era.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of when it was done in the late 70s. And the rapid transformation of that goes to show you how, industrialization and globalization was a part of that. And plus, there was a place for the voiceless youth to get a chance to address the changes that are going on in their day and age. Mm-hmm. So somewhat of a youth rebellion, but what hip-hop has done is crystallized the multiracial generation worldview and transforming it from politics to culture. And that story needs to be told.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like the class is almost going to be a real history lesson on the second half of the 20th century as well, up to now.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because you said that, because jazz has transformed in so many different eras, from swing, which is a big bang arrangement, to early modern jazz, which was part of swing, then late modern jazz to bebop.
Mm-hmm.
But that was it. What you see in hip-hop is that it keeps going, it keeps progressing, and it's been over 30-plus years. So in some ways, it's our longest true art form in North America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, blues and the spirituals and jazz are also our only true art forms, but hip-hop has outlasted all the different genres that we claim that's ours, right?
Wow, so...
It's pretty much going towards 40 years now. I don't know the exact date, but it's getting there.
Because it's interesting you say that, because I guess, are you saying that hip-hop has outlasted in terms of being an active, growing movement? Because I think
absolutely.
Jazz is still alive, you know? I mean, maybe...
Yeah, jazz is still alive, but what I just said to you is that it's been transforming more than jazz.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I just said, right?
It's
been transforming more than jazz. So now you get people like Drake who can actually rap and sing.
Mm.
You know, you Missy Elliott rap and sing. So there's all the, and then you got various forms of hip hop, like bomba, which is huge, but we don't really talk about that in Canada, but it's huge in the States. It's the Puerto Rican side of East Harlem from days of Joe Bataan, which goes back earlier than 79. So if anything, Joe Bataan was one of the first hip-hop folks around.
All the way back earlier.
All the way back. And then even further, if we think about the influence of Jamaican music, reggae,
mm-hmm.
Kool Herc came and brought the two turntables and a microphone to the Bronx. But hey, King Stitt and those guys were doing that way back in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
They were some of the first toasters and MCs, some of the originators.
Right.
And it goes back even further than that. So what I'm saying to you is that it is something that has been created through Kool Herc and the South Bronx posse, but those guys have Jamaican roots.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets even more tricky than that, because a lot of people in South Bronx, they have a lot of relatives in Toronto, which has the biggest Jamaican community.
Can I ask a question?
So there's a connection there between South Bronx and Toronto.
Yeah.
And that's why Toronto has been such a huge rap industry, and also a place where you know, I heard Slum Village for the first time before Slum Village was big, you know. And if you think of all the different Jamaicans that are involved in hip-hop, the list is huge, from your Kool Herc's to your Notorious B.I.G. to your Chuck D's to your Busta Rhymes, Dunga Brothers, Dougie Fresh, mm-hmm. who else? Slick Rick, Pete Rock, KRS-One, Evie D. And then now you got some of the new ones that are actually flexing, like Sean Kingston, Luther Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying to you is that, you know, there's also been a big Jamaican influence on the style of hip-hop.
Yeah. I know you called the class the Black Oral Tradition. Hi, Andy. This is Tiffany, by the way.
Hi, Tiffany.
Hi. I was just wondering if you ever talk about maybe how it's become more accessible maybe in the past, especially in the past 10 years, not just specific to Black performers or Black appreciators. Do you talk anything about that?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
The people that are keeping the movement going are white suburbians.
Yeah.
Youth, so right? And they're keeping that movement going. But also, some of their classes, some of their classes, they get to read classics of certain Black folks from the Harlem Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's James Baldwin, whether it's Richard Wright,
mm-hmm.
And Langston Hughes.
I noticed you opened your Pace Mix with Langston Hughes reading.
Right, yeah.
I was debating whether to start it out with that, but I thought maybe we should get some more beats in
and,
the beginning.
And, you know, there's a lot of great poems by Langston Hughes that is used in hip-hop. And as Mike had just mentioned, I've Known Rivers is classic. I mean, that's used by so many different people, right down to your Joni Mitchells.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got folks like your W.E.B. Du Bois, James Weldon Johnson, your Margaret Walkers, your Nikki Giovanni, you know, William S. Braithwaite, Claude McKay. You know, the list goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all related. It's all related.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm bringing to the forefront, and hopefully I can get through to a lot of people.
Yeah, sounds really interesting.
So talking about the relationships in culture and politics and the identity of hip-hop, I mean, some of the names you just mentioned and are very familiar to people who are as Tiffany was saying, not necessarily into hip-hop, but it's perhaps that is a testament to how it's becoming more accessible. But the roots of this tradition seem to be so connected with the literary tradition of really, I mean, I don't want to say that like appropriate it from the Black community, but these are the stars of the Western literary tradition in their own right, right?
That's correct.
So I don't know, do you think that hip-hop maybe one day we'll be able to look at it as in a line, just on the same timeline as, you know, basically English language or other linguistic tradition, literary traditions and poetry?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not going to be compared to, like, Dylan Thomas or anything. But at the same time, we have great folks who are writing about it, like Jeff Chang at UCLA, KRS-One, who teaches at San Diego University, Luke Fox, Nelson George, Brian Coleman. And then on the Puerto Rican side that I mentioned, that we keep neglecting, is a great writer by the name of Juan Flores. And if we go even further, we're emulating a lot of the Black oral traditions that were signified. We you know, in West African literature, we talk about the monkey, the trickster, and in the West Indies, we talk about the spider. Right, the Anansi stories, which is huge in England, and it's huge in Canada. If you're really into English literature,
can you give us a little background on those characters?
Well, those characters are characters that were actually told in stories, and then at the end of the story, there's a moral to the story.
Mm-hmm.
And we also find that in the Bible through Proverbs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something else I can actually touch on a bit in terms of the Proverbs. But the significance of all that is something that was degrading in terms of ebonics. We thought of Black English as something that was really unruly and really illiterate in terms of English.
Right.
Now it's coming in the forefront in hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding that even white suburb kids are talking ebonics.
Yeah, it seems...
They're talking with slang. They're talking from that street culture. And that's hip-hop for you. Hip-hop is a way of life, right?
Right.
Wow. Just and like how any other black medium we've used in North America, whether it's blues, the spirituals, or jazz, it was a way of life, which came from the Atlantic slave trade. We had no choice but to actually have our people get together with the Irish missionaries and figure out this English language that we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the logistics are pretty interesting in terms of where it came from and the stream and the bloodline and the lineage and the ancestry.
Yeah.
It's all there.
It's an amazing accomplishment when you think about it. I mean, we've seen this before when it comes to Irish poets, for example, you know, basically taking a language that isn't your own and doing something with it that's never been done before. And
that's right.
And changing it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So soon we have to switch over to Democracy Now, which we always play at 8 a.m. I'm excited to continue this conversation because I want to get into basically, I mean, your life has synced up with some of the most captivating currents in recent history of musical culture, as you've sort of been a firsthand witness to a lot of the birth and growth of musical movements all over. And I guess you must have been there and basically seen hip hop get started. And
that's right.
I want to talk to you about that. But in the meantime, I think we have to switch over to Democracy Now right now.
Okay.
So if you don't mind just hanging on the line for a few minutes, we'll get you back.
Gotcha.
Okay. Thank you, Andy Williams.
You're welcome.